are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. This is Rooftop Farming with Ben Flanner, a weekly update on heritageradionetwork.org, live from the Brooklyn Grange.
Hey, we are on the line with Ben Flanner, getting our weekly dose of all that's happening in the rooftop farming world. Ben, what's going on?
Hey, Aaron. Well, this week we are continuing to plant out seeds in our hoop house. We started 1,000 or so onions over the weekend, and then yesterday we put in about 16 trays of kale and spigarello and some rainbow chard. All these crops are a little bit more hardy. They can handle a little bit cooler weather, so we're starting them now, and then several 5-6 weeks we'll be taking them outside.
Nice. And I just had a quick question. Have you seen any movement on the onions that you planted? Any little sprouts coming out, or is it still just black dirt?
Hey, it's still dirt, but I'd expect them very soon.
Awesome.
And then I also want to talk about spigarello for a minute, because it's very likely that people are unaware of it and or interested. It's kind of like a cross between a broccoli leaf and kale. If you know what broccoli leaf looks like, it has a little bit more of a pointiness to it and a little bit more of a sawtooth type of a texture to it. And it comes from Italy, likely from the south, and it's great raw. You can also saute it. It's called spigarello. There's a farmer in Union Square named Rick Bishop from Mountain Berry Sweet Farm who regularly sells it, and he's kind of known as one of the leaders who kind of introduced it to the city in the last maybe 5-10 years. Before that, I think most people probably hadn't heard of it. And then also a friend, Wade, the chef at Rosemary's, told me that he used it in Arizona a few years ago, but mostly as a baby leaf, which you probably eat raw and not need to saute. And then still going along the seed front, we're starting celery and parsley today. They're a little bit larger seed. It almost looks kind of like a caraway or a fennel seed, if you could picture that. Maybe some folks have bought celery seed before, probably to make a curry or a soup or something like that. But they often pulverize it when they sell it in the stores, so it's a powder instead. It's a slower seed to germinate. It takes a little bit longer. So it's definitely one of those tougher crops to germinate. It really strives, it really pushes you up for to be very patient with it, to wait for it. You don't want to overwater it, you don't want to underwater it, and if you do it right, you hopefully get the seeds coming out after about 12 days, but sometimes it can even be like 14-15 days. So it's definitely something that especially someone with a little less experience, they might even give up on it and say, oh shoot, I screwed up the parsley seed, but it just takes a while to germinate, and sometimes they'll just like pop out in the middle of the summer too, just when they hit the perfect conditions.
So you just kind of hurry up and wait, right?
Yeah, hurry up and wait, exactly. Your paint dries while your parsley germinates. And then we're also doing some spring cleaning where the soil's finally workable. It's been frozen for most of the last several weeks, months. It's been freezing at night, but it's a lot more workable, and actually we just got a little dose of sun earlier, although it might be gone already. So we're tidying up. We're shoveling out some areas that had some erosion, doing a little bit of work, just getting things in order. And then very excitedly, yesterday we filled up the first chamber of our forced air compost system. Kyler, Chris, and Charles, the three C's from the New York City Compost Project, are taking the lead, and they just recently installed it. To describe it in a little bit more detail, it is a compost system that is on our roof. It's basically like 5 big cedar boxes, sort of like chambers, and each one probably holds about 2 cubic yards, so they're not small. And they have a PVC tube in the bottom of them through sort of a network. So if you imagine a PVC tube that looks almost a little bit like the shape of a tuning fork, and then it has lots of little holes in it, and it's hooked up to an air compressor. And once we have it firing on all cylinders, which we actually basically do now, the air compressor will shoot air through it every half hour or so, maybe 20 minutes, half hour, whatever you set the timer at. And that is aerating the compost. And it's a very clever and simple. It's not overly engineered or anything like that. It's not overly expensive if you do it on the cheap. And it's a way to essentially aerate your compost, which is crucial, without the typical process, which is turning it. And turning it can be very heavy. It can be very time-consuming, and especially in the middle of the summer, when you're busy trying to make a couple bucks selling your vegetables, it's hard to find time to turn the compost. And the concept behind it, just to go a little bit further into it, is that especially in the middle of the pile, it needs to see oxygen. The bacteria that you want thriving in there, breaking down all of your compost, they need to get oxygenated every once in a while. So this basically does that with a really simple automatic system. Mm-hmm. And the cafe below us on the first floor, called Coffee East, they opened up in the late summer or so. They bring up all their vegetable scraps, so we're getting coffee grounds, eggshells, citrus peels, probably about 90 gallons every week or two. And then we blend that with wood chip and straw and other things like that. And then there's our fertilizer. So it's super important for the farm as well.
Ben, I'm curious, how long does it take from when you dump that, bucket full of, limes and coffee grounds or whatever it is, to when you're getting a product that you can, use to put back on the farm?
It's going to vary a little bit depending on the exact recipe that we mix up and also based on the time of the season and everything. But we should be able to break down the products pretty well in maybe three, four months, and then we'll probably cure it for another 3 months just to make sure that it's settled down enough. And then we'll be introducing it to the soil basically as much as possible. At this point that we're at with the farm, it's hard to have too much compost, and there's a lot of good nutrient in there.
Nice. And what about worms? Do worms live in compost, or do they come later?
It depends a little bit. We have a lot of red wigglers in our current compost piles, and they're just multiplying like crazy. They're very happy. They love all that stuff, especially fruit. A compost pile that really gets up to high temperature, they can hit 140, 150, even 160. That's too hot for the worms, and it'll maybe kill a few, but they'll also just kind of push to the outside of the compost pile. But when you really have a good cooking, perfect recipe, good system, it's often common to not use a lot of worms, just because I guess it could be seen as sort of like icing on the cake, but not crucial.
Got it. Awesome. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to call and give us a little update. For folks who want to learn more about what's happening over at the Brooklyn Grange, I would encourage you to visit their website, www.brooklyngrangefarm.com, or follow them on Twitter. It's just at Brooklyn Grange. And then be sure to tune in next Thursday for another update from Ben Flanner of the Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farms.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.